The next argued case is number 22-1140, Bridges against the United States. Mr. Ritzik.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is David Ritzecker, and I'm here on behalf of 42 correctional officer appellants in this matter. These 42 appellants are FLSA non-exempt correctional officers at a prison called FCI Milan in Michigan. At FCI Milan, the agency sets a schedule at the for coverage of shifts at local hospitals.
Just give me, I think we all know exactly what's going on here.
All right, so I'll go straight to some of this. They're not paid for this time between their regular shift and the overtime assignment at the
hospital. What rule, I mean, this case is very tedious just because I've never seen a case where there's so many different regulations coming out of everywhere and trying to put them together. Can you tell us what rule you would like us to adopt?
Yes. So what I would suggest you first do is you look at the OPM regulations. And the OPM regulations, I would say, pardon me one moment. First, you have to look at the definition of a principal activity, and I will summarize it, but it's activities that they are employed to perform is a principal activity. And those include activities they do during their regular shift, regularly scheduled administrative work week, and occasions of periods of irregular or occasional overtime work. That's 5 CFR 550.112. Okay? And then you look at 5 CFR 551.411, which defines the workday as the period between the commencement of principal activities that an employee is engaged to perform on a given day and the cessation of the principal activities for that day. All time spent by an employee in performance of such activities is hours of work. Hours of work are, of course, compensable under Title V as well as the FLSA.
Okay, but I appreciate this, and this is, but you're giving me more than I wanted.
Okay.
I just want to know, what do you take away as being the rule from all of these six sets of regulations that we've got on the table here?
Sure.
We know the circumstances in your case.
Right.
And you want money for your clients.
Yes.
But what is the rule that would allow them to have money? That in circumstances where this is voluntary overtime, not involuntary overtime, right?
That is a distinction without a difference in the regulations, Your Honor.
Okay, but so go with me.
Okay.
Okay, I'm trying to get you to tell me what the rule is.
Right.
In circumstances where there's a voluntary overtime, in this circumstance, where there's an hour between the end of one shift and the start of the other, and there's some required travel within that hour, then your clients, I mean, I just want to see the limits of what you're asking us, because the potential here is overwhelming.
Yes,
in terms of what it's going to cost the government and the taxpayers, depending on whatever rule we would see fit to adopt. So tell us the limits of the rule. What are the limiting principles here?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me just point out a couple of things in this situation. In this situation, there is no dispute. This exact same travel between work sites would be compensable if it came during a regular shift or during the overtime shift. If they were asked to travel to another work site.
Within the regularly scheduled shift.
Right, or in the overtime assignment.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
There is no dispute that the government pays these employees for the exact same work during the exact same gap in time if they are driving a government vehicle or if the overtime is mandatory.
Sure.
Okay? Although there is no distinction in the regulations between the type of vehicle an individual drives or whether an overtime assignment is voluntary or mandatory. And I'll make one other point on the overtime.
So what if there was a six-hour gap? What if there was a three-hour gap?
Yes.
Between the end of the regularly scheduled shift and the beginning of the voluntary overtime shift? Still, you'd say they're still entitled to overtime?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay, so what's the limiting principle of the time between? So the time between the shifts has some importance in your view. What's the time?
It does. Well, okay, so it is not there is no hard and fast rule of what amount of time would not be compensable. It depends on the factual circumstances, and I'll give an example that was
cited. Well, what about 3 hours?
3 hours, if it was a 3 hour break here, I would not seek payment for that time.
What's the difference between, but you're seeking payment for 1 hour.
Right.
What is the difference between 1 hour and 3 hours, other than 2 hours? I know that's the difference. Yes. But.
Correct, Your Honor. No, that's exactly right. But it's the difference is that when the amount of time here, and I will note that in situations here, the time that was between the shifts was 25 minutes, okay? For some it's 25 minutes, for some it's 30 minutes, and for some it's an hour, okay? So there is a range. But here, the difference between 1 hour and 3 hours is, one, the amount of control that the agency has over these individuals. Here, the agency sets the schedule, they assign the overtime, they create this gap of time. They control that amount of time. They offer the overtime assignment. The employee accepts it. Once they accept it, they are required to work it. They can't then not show up. I mean, of course, if they get sick.
Right, it's fine. Okay. But that's...
So that time is under control of the agency because the agency knows that they have to spend that time getting relieved on their post, exiting out of the prison, traveling. Two hours, sure. In that amount of time, an individual would have, there's cases cited and there's Department of Labor regulations on this, but you look at it and see if they are able to enjoy purely personal pursuits, okay? And here, we would argue that they would have time to do things personally. During that hour, during the 2 hour period of time, depending on where they live, of course, they may have time to go home. They may have time to relax. They may have time to go to the gym.
So that's the legal standard. So that it's not 1 hour or 2 hours. It's, we have to adjudicate whether or not that is enough time to pursue. So what if here the prison and the hospital were around the corner from each other? So they have, we're left with the hour they had here, but they're around the corner. So conceivably, they could have gone and got a cup of coffee and made phone calls and done whatever during that period of time. How does that work? So do we are we talking about time plus distance? Is that a factor? I'm just trying to...
No, sure. I think if the prison was around the corner, I think here, if there was a gap of an hour, I believe that they would still be entitled to compensation because they really don't have...
I thought you were making a quite different argument in your briefs. I thought your position was, what's the difference whether they work the second shift as a volunteer or mandatory? They should be treated the same way. Whether it's 1 hour or 3 hours or whatever, they should be treated the same way, not what they do in the intervening time. Is that not your argument?
No, that is not my argument. And our argument is that's partially correct, that we do not believe there is any difference whether you are assigned to work or by taking volunteers and accepting it, or if you're ordered to do it, there's no other option, you have to go do it.
You're not taking that position? That's not your argument?
There's no difference between, in our position, whether or not the overtime is mandatory or accepted on a voluntary basis.
But it is your argument.
What?
Do I want to be clear what your argument is?
Our argument
is... They should be treated the same way, and that ends it?
That is. They should be treated the same way. Because once the overtime is assigned, they're required to work it. And then they are required to leave the prison and get to that overtime assignment within 25 minutes or an hour, depending on the end of their schedule.
Why isn't this time post-liminary activity with respect to the principal activity, and therefore excluded under 551.412b?
So, Your Honor, there's several reasons for that. And first of all, 551.412b, it only applies to post-liminary or preliminary time. And here this is not that, because it is from, it goes from the time the first principal activity takes place that starts the workday to the cessation of those principal activities at the end of the workday in the regulations that I cited in, at the initial part of this argument. So everything in between the principal activities is compensable. This is part of the workday. Not only that, but under the travel regulations, this travel is hours of work, and hours of work must be compensated. So if it's hours of work, it can't be a preliminary or a post-liminary activity, because it's the actual hours of work. You're actually, that's the work.
But you're considering that the second voluntary assignment is a principal activity of the day.
I'm sorry?
You are considering that the second voluntary assignment is a principal activity of the day.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The regulations are clear on that matter, that principal activities include irregular or occasional overtime. It's no different than if someone was working in the prison and their relief doesn't show up for whatever reason. You know, car, trouble, sick. And if they're required to stay on, they're still performing their principal activities. They're still entitled to compensation just because it goes over their regular shift. This is really no different. This time is under the control of the agency. The agency could have set up a system where they didn't allow officers to do this. They didn't allow officers to go from the one worksite to the other worksite within this time period. They could have required, they could have had the schedules be exactly the same, where it would be impossible for an officer to do that. And then they would just get overtime volunteers from people that are off that day.
Or they could have done it 3 hours later.
Or they could have done it 3 hours later, but they didn't.
No good deed goes unpunished. okay, so it's the the amount of control.
The amount of control here, and it is, I mean, you can't ignore the amount of time. So in your example of 3 hours, I do have a case where the individuals have to travel like 120 miles. I can't remember, but it's like 90 minutes, excuse me. But it's 90 minutes to get to the hospital. This prison is located in a more rural region. In those situations, you know, they apply an hour and a half to get from, you know, the prison to the hospital. So the amount of time in this, it does matter. It's kind of a fact-specific basis. I believe I cited that.
Well, it's not just the amount of time, though. I thought you, I don't know that you finished answering the question I had, was what if it was around the corner? So we're talking about an hour, but about built-in time that they might have in their control to do other things. And I didn't know what your answer to that was.
Right. So there, that is a closer call. If they were given an hour and they only had to go around the corner, you know, I would argue that they would still have to get out of the prison. They would have to be relieved. They would have to go to the second prison. It seems like that would be something they could probably do within 20 or 30 minutes. It's similar to if they were working within the prison and working an overtime shift and had to go from, let's just say, housing unit A to housing unit D. They're paid for that time to get there. And here, this should be paid too. I think when the amount of time is so small that the individual can't use it for any other purpose than to either work or be engaged to wait to work, that is the crux here. It's really no different than times of inactivity. If you're working in a factory and the factory line goes down for 20 minutes or an hour and you're not working, you're still paid for that time because you're engaged to wait. For a small amount of time, you know, to get to a prison next door, if you're given 30 minutes or an hour or something like that to get there, that is not enough time for them to do anything else but be engaged to wait and to go to work under the control of the agency. However, if they have more time, again, it's a fact-specific, you know, analysis, but 3 hours to go around the corner would be ample, and that they shouldn't seek compensation for that entire time. Similarly here, if it was 3 hours to go, they would have ample time to do something else. But here, they really don't have time except to engage in the process of going from one work site to the other. And there's no dispute that this would be compensated if the agency simply said, we need you to work from 6 a.m. until 11 p.m. and we need you to start at the prison and we need you to then go to the hospital, if the schedule was 17 hours, this time would be compensated. If it was traveled in a government vehicle, they would have compensated it. If it was mandatory overtime, they would have compensated it. And there's also no dispute that if this was in the private sector, that this time would be compensable under the Department of Labor regulations, continuous workday rule, where they specifically say travel from job site to job site is compensable. Just because you are working and your shift ends at 4 o'clock and something happens and your boss needs you across town to go work on it, you're compensated for that time. It's all part of the continuous workday.
Let's hear from the other side.
Okay,
we'll save you some rebuttal time.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The holding of the trial court should be affirmed because it correctly determined that the appellants are not entitled to pay for time spent traveling between their regularly scheduled shifts at the prison and the voluntary overtime shifts guarding inmates at area hospitals.
I anticipated Judge Newman asking this question, and I have the same question, which is, is it correct that the government's position is if the overtime is required or compelled, then they would have been paid for this? And if the answer to that is yes, why should the rules be different, whether it's voluntary overtime or required overtime?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's evidence in the record that, in fact, the guards are paid if it's mandatory. However, our position is that the voluntary nature is not in and of itself dispositive. What is dispositive is the manner in which the shifts are scheduled. And the reason is that the overtime shifts at the hospitals are not part of the guards' principal activities. So the way that we get there is that...
But then how does the government get away with paying for if it's required? I mean, if they are not part of the regular schedule activities, then why in the context of paying of mandatory overtime are you allowed to pay them? I mean, the government can't go around paying money that it's not obligated to pay. So there must be something that makes you feel that to pay for required overtime, there's a requirement.
Yes, Your Honor. So just to be clear, as an initial point, no one's disputing that, you know, the time at the hospitals is paid for. I think the question is, and there's some lack of clarity in the record as to when we say mandatory overtime. There is a distinction between a supervisor coming down to a guard and saying, I need you to get over to the hospital right now. Something's happened. Get in your car. Drive over there right now. If that's the definition of mandatory overtime, then yes, they would be compensated for that because they were directed to essentially proceed immediately. The question before the trial court, though, wasn't that. The question before the trial court was when we have this gap of an hour and the guards are asked, do you want to work this shift? And they say yes. Then that means they have to appear at that time and that place. And what I would say to...
So I guess I just need to put this to bed because it really is confusing to me. Mm-hmm. So if you have a workplace and they say, okay, every other month, you, me, and Judge Newman mm-hmm. are going to have to work double shifts, at first at the prison and then move to the hospital and get overtime. Mm-hmm. So it's required. It's not necessarily forever, but it's required for a certain amount of time. Are we allowed to get paid? Are we getting paid for that travel time, that 1 hour it takes us to get through in that circumstance?
In that circumstance, no, Your Honor.
I thought we were accepting that for voluntary no pay, for required was pay.
I think there's a bit of confusion as to this distinction of what Your Honor just described, which is this scheduled nature or a gap in the activities or a pre-planned gap, as opposed to the other hypothetical of someone just being instructed to proceed immediately.
Okay, but you're saying in the regular mandatory, not voluntary overtime, if it's not an exigent circumstance, et cetera, then you're, because you wouldn't be pre-scheduled. If this was an emergency, right. And you're, then that wouldn't be a pre-scheduled regular stuff. I just want to know what the record is, because if the government's doing two different things, I think we have to justify what the distinction is. But you're telling me that's not true.
That's my understanding, Your Honor, is that when there is this gap in the shifts, that they are not entitled to pay for that time. And
even if it's a part of your regularly scheduled thing, is that it's mandatory overtime.
That's my understanding, but I would also...
It's not the record before us.
Well, Your Honor, the
record is clear, I thought, that if you are ordered to take the second shift, you get paid for the hour. You say no?
Honestly, Your Honor, the record and the trial court's reference, I believe, is at the third or fourth page of the decision where they mention the mandatory overtime. It's unclear to me whether or not that's referring to this gap period or the exigent assignment.
But the question of what is mandatory isn't at issue here.
That,
because this second activity was not mandatory.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the point that I would like to make is that the voluntary or the mandatory nature of it is not the dispositive question under the regulations, and that's what the trial court held.
So what are the dispositive questions?
The dispositive question is the regularly scheduled administrative work week. In other words, the guards work their regularly scheduled shifts at the prison, and then there's this irregular ad hoc period where they volunteer, but they work an additional shift at the area hospitals. The trial court found, and again, walking through the regulations, which admittedly I think the court described it as a nested definition, but in going through the regulations, what we arrive at is the regularly scheduled administrative work week is the principal activities. And while they're entitled to the compensation for the time spent working at the area hospitals, that work is outside of the principal activities.
And which regulation covers this? Is it 412B?
Yes, Your Honor. We begin there, and then we look to the accompanying regulations for the definitions that inform that. So, yes, it begins with 551.412B, but then we also look to 551.421 for the definition of regular working hours, and then 550.112 for the definition of principal activities. And
so you're saying that there's no difference. Neither one gets paid for that dollar, that hour gap. That isn't the way it's been presented. But if there is no difference, then their argument is weakened. But it seemed to me that the government was justifying, because they say these are the OPM rules and we don't make the rules and this and that. And if you are ordered, you can always say no, I suppose, to an order. But if you're ordered to the shift at the hospital, you get paid for the hour in between. You're saying that that's wrong?
Well, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that on this record, there were no or next to no instances where anyone was ever ordered to do so. Well, I'm also saying
you're not being direct. Is it that you don't know the answer?
In short, as a factual matter, I don't know, as I stand here today, whether or not the prison in fact pays someone for that hour if they're ordered to do it.
All right. Well, we're told here that the answer to that is yes. They do pay. So perhaps what we need is a statement on behalf of the government as to exactly what the practice is. A clear statement. A document.
It, potentially, Your Honor, if the court would like that, I guess the point that I'm making is that, again, under the regulations, they wouldn't be entitled to payment for that time, regardless of whether or not it's voluntary.
That was my question. When you're reading the regs, all the regs yes. you've cited to us, is there a distinction and an argument one would make that this they would apply to mandatory, even though they don't apply to voluntary? Or vice versa, depending.
Yes, the bottom line is, Your Honor, the voluntary nature of it is not the dispositive question. And the trial court didn't hold that. The trial court noted that, again, under the facts of the record, it essentially always is voluntary. But the dispositive question was the irregular nature of the overtime scheduling at the hospitals.
And we have to accept that as a fact.
Yes, Your Honor, because the appellants don't dispute that. Even in their briefing before this court, I believe it's at pages 32 to 34 in their briefing, they indicate that there isn't a dispute that the overtime shifts are irregularly scheduled, and there's good reason for that. Because, again, we're talking about...
It's not the issue. The issue is whether these workers get the same pay for the same work. Isn't that what the government is all about?
Oh, certainly that is a principle of the government, Your Honor, but I guess what I'm saying is that whether it's voluntary or not, they wouldn't be entitled to payment for that time.
What about 550.112a, which includes activities during periods of irregular or occasional overtime work? Does that not include traveling time to such irregular periods?
Yes, Your Honor, it would be excluded because, again, it's a post-liminary or preliminary activity. Again, it's akin to commuting, which would be under the Portal to Portal Act. But one other point to make about 551.12 that came up, and the trial court addressed this at footnote 8 in the decision, which is that in 551.12, there's this reference to activities performed by an employee during periods of irregular or occasional overtime work authorized under 550.111. And the trial court noted that appellants are specifically excluded from that definition because they're not covered under 550.111. So, again, in reading these regulatory definitions together, the point is that 550.112 demonstrates that the activities performed by the appellant or appellants at the area hospitals are outside the scope of principal activities.
But here we're not talking about the activities performed in that irregular work, but travel time to such activity.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, under the definition in 550.412b, those would be preliminary or post-liminary activities. This discussion about whether or not they're under the control of the agency or anything like that, they have concluded their activities at the prison. They have, you know, departed the prison. They're traveling to, commuting to another work site. And again, that travel time is no different from an employee traveling to their regular place of work to perform work. And along the way, you know, they can, you know, do whatever they want. They can, you know, make a phone call, listen to music, stop for food, whatever it may be. But that time is not work.
I don't see the word control in any of these regs. Maybe I've missed it. So are you saying the issue of control isn't dispositive, whatever it means?
Yes, I would agree with that, Your Honor. that the issue that is dispositive and that comes from the regs is whether or not they're performing their principal activities and whether or not the activity in this case, the travel, is considered a post-liminary or preliminary activity, which it is. If the court doesn't have any further questions.
Anything else? No? Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Just a few points, if I could. First of all, this is not akin to a commute. It doesn't meet the definition of a commute in the OPM's regulations. Commutes are home-to-work travel or work-to-home travel. We are not seeking compensation for those situations here. This is not a commute. This is travel between work sites. Okay, that is very clear. And so when you, the use of the word commute to try to conflate the two here is simply inapplicable. Second, the voluntary nature of accepting an overtime assignment, an employee can't volunteer to work for free under the FLSA. They can't say, oh, I'll work overtime, but you don't need to pay me.
Well, the question here isn't whether they're working for pay. The question is the travel time.
Exactly. And here, Your Honor, the overtime assignments are offered, and if accepted, they are then required to work that assignment. Okay? And so the travel is required. And the agency knows they're working at the prison for 8 hours. They know they have 1 hour or 30 minutes or whatever the shift may be to get to that assignment. It is under their control, and indeed, the definition in the OPM regs, and I can find it in a moment, Your Honor, it does include the definition of a control. If it's for the benefit of the employer and under the control of the employer, the time is compensable. It is hours of work. Here, the travel is solely for the benefit of the employer. The employer has to have someone watching this inmate. It's required. Okay? And so the employee is doing this travel for the benefit of the employer to get there to be able to guard this inmate when they're
Any different than me traveling from my house to the court?
Because that is specifically excluded in the OPM regulations, which said home to work and work to home travel is not considered hours to work. However, if you are required to drive a vehicle.
Right, but that's not going on here.
Yeah, no, but yes, but they are required to drive a vehicle to get to the hospital assignment. And here, commutes are specifically excluded. We are not.
They're not using company cars, right?
If they did use a government vehicle, they would be paid for it, for the exact same travel, for the exact same
gap. Right, but they're not. There's no dispute on the record here.
They do that occasionally on the record, and that is compensated.
Okay.
And I will also add under the record, the record is clear. We're not talking about a situation where someone's working during their shift and the lieutenant says, oh, the guy at the hospital just got sick. You have to get over there to cover. Here, they go through the overtime assignment process, and if no one accepts that overtime assignment, then they have to mandatory someone to work that. And that is exactly what we have here. They're doing the exact same thing. They're working a shift. They're like, sorry, no one picked up this assignment. I'm sorry it's Christmas Eve, but you've got to get to the hospital. And then that situation, they would pay him for it.
I didn't hear that those are our facts.
Those are the facts.
That no one accepted it, and therefore it was made mandatory to someone else.
That is exactly the facts. It was asked, if no one accepts the overtime assignment, can it be assigned, like mandatorily assigned, ordered? And the answer was yes, and in those situations, the individual
your clients, were not in that circumstance. They voluntarily agreed to that. I think that's Judge Lurie's point, and isn't that the case?
I'm sorry, they voluntarily agreed
to it. They didn't say nobody volunteered, so you're required to do it. They volunteered, right?
So if that happened to my clients, we are not seeking that because they were paid for it. The government
Okay, so the complaint here
is they accept the overtime assignment.
Voluntarily accept the
overtime assignment.
Our case is not about people who, in other circumstances. Our case involves employees who voluntarily accept the overtime. I think that was the point, Judge.
Yes, and that's correct. They voluntarily accept this because somebody has to. And if it's assigned, mandatory, if no one accepts it, then people are dealing with child care issues. They can't do, these people step up when there's overtime to be worked because they want to help everybody out, and they also want to receive 8 hours of overtime pay. I mean, let's be honest. They simply are not getting paid for that time in between, which they should be and are entitled to under the regulations, under the FLSA, under the continuous workday rule, and more. And there's really no way to distinguish why an individual who is driving a government vehicle or is ordered and mandated to work the overtime assignment is compensated for it, when someone who voluntarily accepts an overtime assignment or drives a personal vehicle is not paid for the exact same amount of time for the exact same work.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, counsel. The case is taken under submission.